I'll be channeling Richard Kwok this morning, who was unfortunately unable to be with us. And I'm going to talk a little bit about our work on the Gulf oil spill and developing a cohort. And I'll talk about some other aspects of our research later on this morning and how it relates to disaster research and response preparedness. We have no disclosures, Richard not being here, but I'll answer on his behalf. So the Deepwater Horizon disaster occurred in April 2010, killing 11 folks, injuring 17, 98 others survived, about 50 miles off the coast in 5,000 feet of water. So there's been a number of oil spills in the past 50 years, but very little data, especially longitudinal health data, is available to really understand the health implications of these disasters, whether it's on the workers or on the communities that are associated. So one, particularly the Prestige oil spill in 2002, had some research and actually some limited longitudinal research, and they suggested that there were ongoing respiratory symptoms, some genotoxic effects, and certainly mental health effects, which were also observed in the Exxon Valdez situation in Alaska. But very little exposure data as well. And the one, they really basically are looking kind of very grossly at your distance from the actual spill in relation to what you were doing or where you lived. To complicate the Deepwater Horizon even further was also the use of dispersants, which we didn't really see in some of these other ones, but over 1.8 million gallons of dispersants were used and sprayed over the site. So shortly after the spill, the IOM actually held a meeting here in New Orleans about a month later and identified that, you know, there were really important research gaps here that needed to be identified and looked at, and as quickly as possible, also identifying the fact that we needed to be looking at mental health and psychosocial impacts, looking at sensitive populations, involving our stakeholders, and also trying to make data available to the wider research community over time with respect to our efforts. So our task was really, for this particular study, was to look at the cleanup workers, try to understand, you know, what their health impacts were and what they did, et cetera, be transparent, address community concerns, involve various federal partners, stay out of the way of the disaster response. I mean, no one wanted you to get in the middle of that. And also, you know, be sound and don't create unrealistic expectations of what you're doing. Try to be very communicative to the community. And, of course, do everything really fast. Not easy. So we undertook the Gulf study, the Gulf long-term follow-up study, really to try to assess the long-term health impacts on workers and also investigate biomarkers of adverse effects and look at some other issues. And also create a platform for collaborative research over time. So the key challenges affecting our design. So there were over 150,000 people involved in cleanup activities. Few of them were oil spill workers. They came from differing backgrounds. Many folks had fishing boats and were displaced and were also now involved in cleanup activities. Other folks were unemployed workers in the Gulf Coast, either recently unemployed because of the spill or out of work and doing differing tasks. Contractors, various federal folks, you know, a host of differing people who don't do oil spill as a primary job, and they were involved in the various cleanup activities. There was no centralized data system for them. There were many contractors, many different agency folks, people working for different organizations, including the parishes in New Orleans and county folks, public health people as well. So we began to assemble with great pain various lists of people that were involved. Including we did training from our work education training program at NIEHS. NIOSH did a really interesting effort of rostering workers, and then they had about 50 to 55,000 names of individuals that were also involved in some of the work things. Also, BP had lists, and their contractors had lists. So we spent a great deal of time trying to understand, identify, and assemble these lists so we could do some representative research and identify a cohort. After going through about 150,000 names and getting rid of duplications, misspellings, and identifying the folks that really were close to the Gulf, We ended up with a master list of about 75,000 to start the cohort enrollment process. And as you can see here on the right, the little map showed people were coming from all over the country, but predominantly Alabama, Florida, and Louisiana, each about 25%, Mississippi 16%, and other about 10% of people coming from other locations. So the next challenge or difficulty of this was identifying the job tasks and the locations of work and trying to get ancillary objective information about what people were doing and where they were working. In multiple contracts, differing record systems, etc., varying information about what they did, and also assessing the stressors and exposures and the variable use of PPE, etc. Many had lost jobs, and also what were the implications on their domestic life. People were coming from the Gulf Coast. They were already impacted in where they lived in their community, especially those closer to the coastal communities, and trying to understand some of those elements and how it was affecting what they were doing. The key health outcomes of interest was based on some of the research, as I mentioned, from previous oil spills, also studies of relevant occupational exposures involved in the oil industry, and then also some of the concerns that people had, not only the participants and workers, but people along the Gulf Coast, what were some of the concerns in trying to include that. Focus areas, again, as I mentioned, respiratory disease, neurologic systems associated with the volatile organic compounds that were being emitted from this, and genotoxic effects, which had been expressed in the Prestige oil spill. So the Gulf long-term study began, and we began enrollment about 11 months after the actual spill, which is record time for a large-scale cohort study by NIH. And we enrolled people from 2011 to March 2013. We had 32,600 participants. There was an enrollment questionnaire that was done as a telephone interview that included health, lifestyle, occupation, socioeconomic factors, demographics, what they did at the cleanup, their living accommodations, any spill-related health effects they may have been experiencing, and then mental health, depression, anxiety, perceived risks, etc. And this cohort is ongoing, and it's going to be followed for more than 10 years. Telephone interviews every 2 to 3 years, and we're started the first follow-up in progress. We have already recontacted 18,000 people. We've also partnered with SAMHSA, who saw this a really great opportunity to try to look at longitudinal mental health issues, because most of the work is usually done on disasters. It's very cross-sectional, especially in terms of mental health. So SAMHSA's joined partnership with us, and we're including mental health resiliency elements as well as part of these repeated efforts. And then we plan on linking to vital records and cancer registries over time. Within the cohort, we created some sub-cohorts. And almost a month later, after we started enrolling people in the original cohort, we created a sub-cohort of home visits where we can get much more detailed health and physical health information. And these were workers across the five Gulf states. We enrolled 11,000 workers, and that went for 2 years. And those clinical assessments included pulmonary function, also blood, urine, toenail clippings, hair, saliva. We looked at vitals. We got people's, we identified people that had hypertension for referrals, elevated blood sugars, that had early diabetes, et cetera, and made healthcare referrals trying to, make some also immediate value to some of the things. Also identifying people that had acute mental health issues for referrals as well. We started in August 2014 another sub-cohort of this, taking the group that was involved in the home visits, and we're planning on enrolling 4,000 for much more comprehensive clinical visits, repeat home visit measures, detailed neurologic and respiratory exams, including exhaled breath condensates, screening for diabetes and lipids, and enhanced mental health assessments, again, in concert with SAMHSA. So there's kind of a picture of our study timelines. Again, the Deepwater Horizon happened in April of 2010. You could see the cohort was enrolled from March 11, 2011 through the 13th. Home visit exams just behind that by a month. And the follow-up started in May 2013. About 18,000 now have been recontacted. We're chasing down folks. It's been a challenge. And a clinical exam, which we started in August of 2014. Let me just talk a little bit about the exposure assessment, which has been very difficult. And that fact is trying to understand what people were doing, where they were doing at it, what information we have. So we have the study questionnaires where people reported what they were doing, what they were wearing. People also had multiple job tests over time. Groups of work, we tried to group workers on similar or job exposure profiles. And that first kind of cut of understanding, well, what were they doing? What do we really understand about what they were doing? And so we had industrial hygienists try to categorize them high, medium, low, starting with some metrics of it, and then beginning to look at available exposure information, which was all over the place, depending on who collected it, area samples, personal breathing zone information. BP did a lot of work. OSHA had samples. NIOSH had samples. EPA had area samples. NOAA and USGS samples, and trying to make heads and tails of well over several millions data points in samples. And that's an ongoing process that we continue to work at. Other potentially important area of components was trying to break it down by the both in terms of job tasks, but areas and locations. Were they offshore? Were they onshore? What kinds of activities were they doing? Were they cleaning and deconning boats? Was there other chemicals being utilized? Folks offshore, like on the boats, were actually living out there close to the platforms. They were actually out there for days on end and could have, you know, 24-hour exposures. And taking that into account, it's not a traditional 8-hour workday exposure. We're looking at long-term exposures. Additionally, there was a lot of concern here in the Gulf, especially that doctors were pulling blood on people that were living here and getting elevated volatile organic chemicals, particularly benzene was an area of concern that physicians in the Gulf were getting, or we were trying to figure out, well, is it related to the exposure? Or these are volatile, so they don't last in your blood very long. They're a very short half-life. So what do we really understand about the VOC background in the Gulf and what may be a contributor or have been a contributor related to what we're seeing, maybe related to the oil spill. Now, the problem with the oil spill was gone. I mean, we didn't start till 11 months later, so anything that would have been a VOC in the person's blood, you know, would have been gone by then. But we wanted to try to help people understand what is the background levels here, what were the things that they were being measured by their physicians who kept saying they have elevated levels, et cetera, and continue to, and we're attributing it to the Gulf spill. So we did a subsample study, and we're comparing it to NHANES data, and looking at those BTEX levels and giving people, you know, an understanding of what background is, how it's affected by smoking and other things here in the Gulf, being an area of high petrochemical activity and other industrial activities. So the preliminary findings, and what we're doing right now, is, as I mentioned, in terms of the exposure reconstruction, it's ongoing. We've done some work based on industrial hygiene kind of categorizations, but now we've also taken exposure data and had to go back and reanalyze some of these thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of data points in a more sensitive way using laboratory analysis. So what would have been non-detects, when we went back and reanalyzed it, were detectable concentrations of volatile organics and other chemicals, and being able to now do a much more sophisticated exposure reconstruction matrix, which is ongoing. But at least in the, kind of the interim preliminary analysis, using some of the kind of the rough categorical associations, we see elevated wheeze costs and respiratory symptoms in workers versus non-workers. Also, elevated scales for depression and post-traumatic stress in workers versus non-workers. And additional information will be coming out soon as we finish the exposure reconstruction, and we'll start that analysis. Some of the challenges, study populations, who are they, how can we contact them, how do we use differing data collected by differing groups and try to combine this. The study development process, getting IRB, OMB, and certificates of confidentiality, particularly trying to give people a higher level of confidence that their information is protected. And also trying to install health and mental health referrals, appropriate referrals as we do not only the enrollment, but clinical exams on people and then have concerns or may identify problems and issues to make appropriate referrals. Baseline data for comparison was almost non-existent except for Coast Guard and very few small populations. And again, as I mentioned, the exposure reconstruction has been incredibly challenging. Trying to take data collected for differing purposes, regulatory agencies collecting it for differing ways, differing methods, and differing levels of sensitivity, and trying to combine that and reanalyze it. I'd just like to thank the study investigators. I think I'm on time. The Gulf study is online, and so are all the protocols and research. It's an ongoing basis where we're rolling out information. It's also a platform for other researchers now. There's archived biospecimens across the cohort that people can begin to apply for proposals and do research off of this data set. And so there's the study URL.
Questions or do it. Yeah, I think unless anyone has a burning question, we'll hold them to the end. Any burning questions out there? Linda?
Linda Delpo. Really much. Give me a question. You were talking about levels of the study publicly numbers compared to other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, let me explain that real quick. So that's great. Thanks for reminding me of it. So within the cohort, there were people that actually that signed up to become workers, and they weren't actually employed to be workers, and so we had their names on lists. And then there's groups of folks that actually didn't do any cleanup work. They were doing administrative things. They were outside of the actual kind of cleanup activities. So they kind of serve as our control population. Okay, great.
Thank you.